condition, my condition was in.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
Found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him. I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky. I just dropped in to see what condition my condition.
Well, hope Snatch and Jack, somehow. Mr. Jack Silverman on the board. So, Jack, it's been about 5 months. Does it feel like riding a bike or what?
Pretty similar.
Pretty similar. For those of you who don't remember, we had Jack last summer, helped us out. The student at the University of Indiana did an unbelievably good job, and he likes us so much. He says, hey, can I come back at Christmas and stay in this? Of course, we had a quiz him on his grades. We also have Mr. Kevin O'Neill. SP Futures up 25 cents, and NASDAQ Futures down $2 after an unusual, pretty big down day yesterday. Kind of came from out of nowhere as we were talking on the show. We were up 5 spoo points, and all of a sudden we were down 17 spoo points. That's a big move. Did a spin move yesterday. So, Jack, I assume all A's and B's, we don't suffer hooks in this operation.
Of course.
Kevin, how are you? Of course, you never got any hooks.
No. In fact, I had lunch with an old friend of yours and mine, Kirk Dorweiler. Yesterday, and we talked about how amused some of my college professors would be to learn how much emphasis I put on showing up for class.
Oh, good. Well, you know. Well, you know, that sort of happens. The only guy that we ever sort of embarrassed a little bit on that was, actually was a terrific guy. Remember, did you ever take, Professor Croteau?
Sure, I took him a couple of times.
He was a good guy.
JT was great.
And, he actually did some of the original, one of the, when Todd Gunderson was on from, Credit Union One, and he's going to be back on probably next week. He was stunned when I was telling him that we actually took a course in the professor was one of the original researchers on the economics of the credit union and wrote all kinds of stuff regarding federal credit unions, state, and private credit unions. Todd was, matter of fact, I promised I'd get him that book and I haven't done it. I think they still have it at your old place, The Economics of the Credit Union from Croteau.
I think probably. So, yeah, he had taught that. He taught money and banking, which is a course I may teach pretty soon. So everything that JT taught me, I will surely share it with my students.
Well, we had him for a 2 o'clock class on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, or something. All of a sudden, one of the Fridays, like, was, you know, 85 degrees, and let's just say the golf course beckoned, and then he only had like a couple people there. That Monday, he goes, "Students, it was a nice day. I don't mind a few people leaving, but." When a few people show, it looks bad for me. You got to at least get most people here. You know, to decide among yourselves who gets to play golf and at least get me over half. And he was such a nice guy. Everybody goes, okay, we will. You know, I mean, there's no reason to embarrass him. He was the best guy on earth. But he admitted it was
a
pretty nice.
I remember him walking into the classroom one time, and you know, he was a couple minutes late. He walks in, started, you know, it looked like he was going to start saying something and didn't, and then just paused a little bit longer, and finally he goes, you know, every organization has its idiots, but here they all seem to have gravitated to administration.
He was all pissed off one day. I remember that the, you know, very good people give this university money, and the idiots in the administration lose the money, or something along those lines. I'm like, he must have been pretty high up. He was the only full professor for a while in the economics college.
Well, an incredibly accomplished man, and yet somewhat eccentric.
Oh yeah,
which was great, which made his class great, and
somewhat. You think? Yeah.
And you know, really, if you took the time to listen, you learned a lot of stuff because he had stories.
Oh yeah, yeah. I wonder how he zeroed in on the credit union. I mean, it was a big deal back in those days because I remember, well, we had a pretty good sized credit union in our church, and banks were fairly savings and loans were community places, but some of the banks were little. Well, there were community banks too. There are all kinds of banks, but still, some people found them. Especially if you were in an area where a lot of people didn't know the language all that well and stuff. It was easier to use a credit union, I think. Plus, automobiles were only, most people got a $3,000 loan for a car, so you could carry that out of a credit union pretty easily. I mean, now it's
Credit unions are thriving here. Notre Dame Federal Credit Union has a lot of, I believe they're called members, and First Federal is huge. Innova is huge. I mean, there are a lot, and they're thriving here, and they're thriving because partly because their pricing is good, but mostly because their customer service is so outstanding. That it's run by members, and so their board of members takes the mission seriously, and it's not your average condo board, that's for sure.
Well, I think that they're thriving for somewhat of a different reason, Kevin, and because right now the reason is they're becoming banks and doing a way better job, which is a lot different than giving Joe the.
Well, but that's what I mean by customer service. Yeah. They're doing everything that you can get anywhere else, so you don't lack for any particular service. But they're so good at having a customer focus. And there are businesses and there are banks. There's some banks I really like. I'm at First Source, and that's another locally owned and operated bank, and I think that's terrific. And I know some of the Centier people over in this area. I think they're terrific. But so many places don't have that focus. That just fanatic customer focus. It's rare in all businesses. It's something that you notice because the absence of it is so prevalent.
Okay, so let's just say, Mr. Kevin O'Neill, and you take your understudy Jack with you to Congress, and you're on some banking committee, and you look up on the board, and some schmuck like me walks in and says, "Here's Credit Union One," and I imagine they're all some the same, although they seem a little more aggressive. These guys manage to pay a percent and a half on the checking, which I believe these aren't gossip, but I think this is true. Percent and a half on your checking, or percent and a quarter, somewhere in there. They charge 9.8 on the credit card versus 24, and they'll give loans to people for like X. And if you change a credit card balance over to them from like Citibank or someplace, they pay you 2%. Instead of you paying them 3%. And then you put banks we basically perform oral sex on by the day. Let's see, they charge 24 to 30. They don't pay any interest. They charge for everything. And I think, Kevin, if you put that up on the page, you gotta wonder, you gotta knock on Paul Powell's, Powell, the head of the Fed, Jerome Powell, and say, what are your guys doing? I mean, these other people are making money without any of the largesse we give them at these rates, and your guys, with all the stuff we give them, other people deposit stuff with them, and you pay them interest overnight, these guys aren't even in the same league. What seems to be the problem? Are they that bloated, or Are what you're doing to them regulatory wise, is that causing it? But it's not even on the same planet, Kevin. It's like you and I give everything we possibly can to Jack's saloons, right? And he's got 30 of them in Chicago. And we walk in there and Jack's charging $5 a beer, and everybody else charging $3. What are we doing wrong here? I mean, why wouldn't you at least question it? Or is it just me that looks at that stuff and says something weird?
That would require a level of introspection that you're not going to find.
Why?
It's a crazy, when you think about the industry, it is government subsidized and publicly traded.
How
does this work?
But the people who get the most from government charge the most.
Yeah.
And pay themselves the most, it appears.
Yeah.
I'm going to guess, the last thing I want to do is get involved in what somebody pays, especially a guest on the show. But I'm going to guess that Todd Gunderson, who is the COO of Credit Union One, when I said I'd like to have somebody come out of the air, how about our COO? I go, yeah, that'll work. And he was terrific. You know all the history of credit unions and blah, blah, blah. And I hopefully will have him on next week. I'm going to guess I'll never ask him. I'm going to say he makes a tenth of the COO at one of these big banks, at most. And he's happy. He loves the place. Not that, he should be happy.
Well, and whatever else is going on, he's not awash in stock options, because that's not what the organization is.
Well, that's right. There are no stock options. So
right. So you don't have this perverse incentive, and I mean perverse in the sense that we have what essentially is a bunch of public utilities who have the same issues with senior management and directors and such who are focused on lining their own pockets, at least in part. There's a lot of good leadership in every industry.
Yes,
but in the end, you still run into this tendency to say, well, we have to create these exotic compensation plans so that when anybody walks away from our company, they walk away with tens of millions of dollars.
Well, you get into the places where, since they don't, long time ago, statute of limitations ran out, right? So I was on the board of the SIBO in the 90s, and the people who ran the place actually did a terrific job. It was a member organization. Members were not shy with their opinions, and the people who ran the place, I think, by and large, were pretty solid people. But like anybody else, they put, the trick when you put a board together is put people on the board to make more than you do, right? So it's always a question of direction, and especially if you're in a place, the CBOE, where you could essentially pay people whatever you felt like, because all you had to do is raise the rate to the members. Instead of 2 cents a contract, you could charge three. What's the difference? 2.5. I mean, it's not like you go anywhere else. So to a certain extent, they were a monopoly. In a lot of ways, as an organization, they were somewhat of a monopoly. But as a place where you traded stock options, they were way more competitive than it is today. So in my mind, that system is way better than what we have today, where IBM was traded in one spot instead of 18 different spots where you're looking to get paid for order flow and not the best bid or offer. Even though there are rules that say you got to get the best bid and offer, the rules force you to, that's not your job anymore. So anyway, long story short, too late. But they got this consultant one day to check out their compensation. Now, when you get one of these people and they're hired by, quote, the board, the executive committee, they're not going to come in and say your guys are paid too much, Kevin, right? I mean, or they'll never get another job. Duh. So they come in, and they start talking about the two guys, and I think they're both dead. I hope Chuck isn't, but I think he is. Duke Chapman and Chuck Henry are saying, these guys, their competition is the New York Stock Exchange and the Chicago Mercantile Exchange and the Board of Trade. Now, wait a minute. Whoa, 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 whoa. Those places were like five times bigger than the CBOE. Not even close. And those guys are making X per year, $1 million. And so they didn't want the guys to make $1 million a year because they felt that number would turn the members off. So what they did is they kept increasing, all the other stuff that went with it. Retirement. Retirement was going to be $300,000 a year or some huge number, $350,000. So they kept upping these numbers. So Dr. J was on the board at the time, and again, this is, you know, years later, so I guess it's public. Jan comes in with a thing from Crane's Chicago Business, and it listed the salaries of everybody. Basically, the CBOE was a $20 million organization, okay, because the members made the money trading, and that's where most of their money was. The organization itself, whatever, it was 20 or 30 or 40, whatever number was, Jan comes in with this thing from Crane Chicago Business with all these companies, let's say 50, and all the people there, were probably 15 different companies in Chicago that had $50 million in revenue. And every one of them, they listed the chairman or the president and chairman what they made. And they were all in like the 200 to 250 range. Now our guys are a million, right? So Jack drops this on the board, and to say it hit the floor like a fart in church is an understatement. Because wait a minute, you're not comparing us to the head of the New York Stock Exchange, you're comparing us to the guy who's in the button manufacturer that sells $50 million a year in buttons. And John's like, well, yeah, what do you, okay. So of course I was on John's side, which didn't make me all that popular. But I didn't care. And I mean, you do what's right. But I mean, it is really a direction in how you look. Now I can only imagine what the chairman of Commonwealth Edison compares himself to. You know, it's gotta be God, right? Or Solomon or somebody. You know, nobody else could do this job. You know, that type of thing. Where in fact, if you put a, you know, if you went the other way and went in the paper tomorrow, I was showing my age, and said, wanted chairman of Commonwealth Edison will pay $1 million a year, I can't imagine the stack of resumes you'd get. You know, for probably a tenth of what he's making. So, you know,
probably get some really strong ones from people who would love the opportunity and have the talent to pull it off.
Yeah.
And the drive. Yeah, I remember back in my banking days in St. Joe, and I worked for Pinnacle Bank. And one of the things that we did that was part of our success formula is that we could require underperforming organizations that, you know, they were profitable, but they were more, you know, wallowing in that maybe 7% ROE range. And we could acquire them, we could assimilate them, and we could get the whole organization, you know, it will dilute for a couple of quarters, and then the whole organization will be back over 15. And you keep some, but not, you know, not all of the management from the acquired organization. I remember our president, Arnie Weaver, and Arnie was like one of the all-time great bosses. You know, if there was ever any conflict between doing what's right and doing what's most profitable for the bank, we were doing what was right, unless you wanted to get fired. You know, and that was just the way he operated. And I remember him pulling me aside once, and he said, look, these guys, you know, they want us, they had in their old organization, they want us to put in some reverse stock options, and he explained to me how they work and all of that. And I just looked at him and said, well, why would we do something like that? You know, first of all, you know, they wanted their old compensation plan. Well, gee, you know, who was the underperforming organization? But aside from that, you know, I said, no, our shareholders won't understand it. And you know, we need to be straight up with them about, you know, any performance-based compensation, how it works, how it, you know, it has to be clear and easy to understand for them. Otherwise, it looks like we're just trying to get over on them and line our own pockets. And, you know, we had this a longer conversation than that, but at the end, Arnie said, good, I thought it was just me.
Well, Kevin, there's a level that
didn't like this.
I think there's a level at which, clearly in the old savings loans, and even in the smaller banks here in Chicago, I'm going to say I don't even have to worry about who the hell's what they're making, because I think it's competitive, because those places are competitive. They wouldn't be open if somehow the one guy is making $20 million, there's not $20 million to throw around. But my, are you seeing in our? I mean, obviously, Illinois was the last state to go to allow branch banking, and I'm not so sure. Was Michigan must have been close, because you guys got a lot of them there too, small banks. I mean, you don't get that in California. It's all Wells Fargo, pretty much, right?
Wells, B of A, you know, that kind of.
But what we're starting to see. Every quarter, we're dropping a pin here. I mean, it was last quarter last year. This summer, I think it was Bridgeview Bank got bought, and they had, you know, I'm going to say five, six locations. They're going down. I mean, there's a lot of them around, but they're going down. Kevin, are you having the same problem there, or are they hanging in there?
No, they're hanging in.
There's no combinations at all. And all you see here on TV.
Well, I haven't seen one in a long time.
Well, you're lucky because I mean, they're here, and you see people on TV and the CNBC. All they do is talk. Well, we need way more consolidation. Why exactly?
Well, because I think there is a long-standing feeling that we're overbanked. That you know we just have more more capacity out there than was ever necessary. But on the other hand, you know, it's let the market decide what's necessary and what's not.
If we were in a competitive industry and we were overbanked, if we had too many small and efficient farms and a few went under, that's ugly if you're one of those people. But it's a healthy market, right? And people,
yeah, because always some in a competitive market, some outfits die, some don't make it.
Well, but I mean,
it's not in our DNA to let you know that bank failures are a bad thing. That's what's in our DNA.
Well, here's where I'm going with this: is that with farmers, and we used to have a lot of them on the show, and hopefully, maybe we'll be expanding the show soon here. But if we do, we're gonna have a few back. But if you and I have a farm, you know, I know nothing about you know sizes of farms, but if we both have a farm that's 1,000 acres, okay, these guys are not dumb, all right. And if it turns out the machine, I'm going to say tractor like Artie Palmer, if the machine easily does 3,000 acres, okay, and you need 4 or 5 different types of machines. You and I hopefully are not that stupid. We may not even like each other, but say, Kevin, why don't you buy this one? I'll buy this one, and we'll split that one. And by the way, Joe down the block doesn't have to buy any because we'll do his for a fee, and we'll cobble together 3,000 acres or whatever it is that you can do with this particular machine. That way we won't be wasting it. I mean, those guys do that all the time. It's not like they're right.
Describing a phenomenon that shows up in some other industries called co-opetition.
Right. Well, but I mean, you're competing, but why should we compete? We only really need one massive snowblower on the block. We don't need 10. Right? It's just the way.
Yeah.
So, but the issue is that I don't understand the situation where the small bank that is cheaper than the big bank, when that gets taken over and the prices go up, that's not good. Matter of fact, I wanted to talk to you because there was a dude, for a lot of reasons, I mean, I always like to talk to you, but there was a dude on, actually, he was an old, he looked older than me, or you. He was talking about the issue with, like, Google and Facebook and those kinds of places. And he's talking about whether we should break them up or not, we, the government, whoever the hell's going to do it. and he was saying that it's unusual in the sense that the... he says, normally when people become a monopoly, they do just what I said. They buy someplace and they raise the prices. He says, in this situation, they buy somebody, it gets them access to people's information that they now can sell with their first product, their original product. They can lower the price and screw other people that are doing it straight. He says, it's a totally different dynamic. And I never really thought of it that way, but boy, it kind of makes sense, doesn't it?
Saying is they just bought customers, that's all.
Yeah, they bought customers, and so the actual price of whatever it is they're doing, I mean, that's why, I mean, Facebook basically doesn't charge, right? I've never been on there, but I mean, they don't, I mean, you can get on
Facebook. No, they don't charge. You pay by agreeing to that they can use your information.
So if you and I were to do it straight, we would actually have to charge people, and nobody'd pay.
Right.
And sort
because
of like
people are now accustomed to the business model where they don't have to make cash payment for the service.
Well, it's very similar to the securities industries now. To the extent that some firms are going, quote, free and basically getting kickbacks on the back end, if you do it correctly, it's very difficult to compete. If you don't take the kickbacks and saying, oh, that's not what I do, I'm going to try and get the best fill, very difficult for you to make money at free. If you're not getting the bounty on the other end.
Yep.
The
But we should never mistake anything Facebook is free. It's just that we're paying it's a non-cash payment.
Milton Friedman, there are no such thing as a free lunch. Kevin, Happy New Year. We'll talk to you on Friday, I assume.
You will indeed.
All right, buddy. And who knows? Maybe we'll need you for a call in on Thursday. You take care of yourself. S&P futures down 75 cents. NASDAQ futures down 5 now. We were up when we came in. Be right back. Hopefully, Mr. Joel on Cannon.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Blowing up at Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howley. Mr. Jack Silverman on the board, backed by popular demand, the University of Indiana, where he is a standout student. Right, Jack?
Trying to get there.
Right, well, that's all right. SP Futures down $1, and NASDAQ Futures down 6. We were up when we came in. They were up last night. We not up now. Dow Futures down 23. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 88. That's a full 0.7%. FTSE down 37.5%. CAC around down 4. Call that flat. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 1. I think that was the same number in the Nikkei. Let's hold the Nikkei. I'll see if that thing's open. Shanghai up 10. 0.3%. Hang Seng down 129.4. Bonds, this is what we've been interested in. Actually, they're 10 years down a little bit today. 1.89. We were 1.91 yesterday. The Bund minus 0.18, and that's the one that continues to creep up. Japan is stuck here just below zero, minus 0.02. We've got oil down 75 cents, 60.93. These guys are in a real tight range from like 60 to 62 the last really couple of weeks. Brent 65.94. Natural gas 218, even with this little cold snap, we've got the, we continue to go down. RBOB, 171. And gold, we've got, up 710, 1525. That's probably a recent high for sure. Silver up 11 cents, 1812. We're starting to get some movement up in some of the, corn and soybeans and stuff. This could be it. This could be, inflation, everybody says is not there. It might be actually creeping in. We will see. Jack, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports, buddy. Traffic's lousy, and the weather's lousy. I'll help you out.
Yeah, well, not a bad take, but the traffic isn't all too bad right now. It's mainly just a couple accidents that are backing things up. The Stevenson, Eisenhower, and Edens are all looking pretty good. There's just a couple accidents on the Kennedy that are backing it up. On the I-90 west before Camfield Road, there's an accident that's blocking the left two lanes. We have an accident also on the Kennedys. That is west before Belmont Ave that is blocking the two right lanes. Besides that, we have an accident a little bit southwest on I-55 north at Route 83. There's an SUV in a ditch, and one more accident.
Whoa! If you got an SUV, you can go as fast as you want.
Yeah, but not when it's in a ditch.
No, when you're in a ditch, it kind of slows you up a little.
Yeah, so it's not causing too much traffic because it's off the road, but still an accident to be wary about. And then one more accident out in Orland Park, or around Orland Park, at LaGrange Road North at 135 5th Street. Again, not causing too much traffic, but still an accident to be wary about. In weather, Chicago, it's going to be a cold one. It's gonna be currently 25 with some light snow showers at a high of 32. In Phoenix, it's a little bit nicer. It's 49 currently and cloudy with a high of 62. In sports, eventful day. The Bulls hosted the reigning MVP in Giannis Antetokounmpo and the Bucks, and as expected, they lost 123-102. The Suns had a little bit more fortunate outcome. They beat the Portland Trailblazers 122-116, followed by Kelly Oubre's 7 threes. NHL, there's a kind of an off day, only one game yesterday, but the Blackhawks and Coyotes are both back tonight. The Blackhawks visit the Calgary Flames at 8 p.m. Chicago time.
It's kind of a dead zone here. The Hawks and the Bulls, both not so good.
Yeah, it's not amazing. And
Is IU got a team this year, baseball?
Yeah, we lost last night, but we're 10-2, I believe.
Who'd you lose to?
We lost to Arkansas last night, and we got blown out when we went to Wisconsin.
Wisconsin good, or just have a bad night?
No, it was just a terrible night. Wisconsin's not all that great.
Those road games in the Big Ten are tough.
Yeah, the home team usually has the advantage.
I think those Zebras help the home team out a little bit. Mm-hmm.
Well, the Arizona Coyotes are also back tonight. They host the St. Louis Blues at 7 p.m. Arizona time. And talking about college basketball, a lot of Chicago basketball teams were in play. University of Illinois at Chicago lost to Youngstown State 70-64. Loyola Chicago beat Valparaiso 66-63. Chicago State lost to Missouri 33-91, so that one was quite unfortunate for Chicago State. Southern Illinois lost to Indiana State 56-68. And finally, DePaul lost to Seton Hall 66-74. Chief.
Your young lady who helps out. We have Joel? Okay, well, you're the young lady who helps out since you've been back at school from the Ukraine. Tom, what do I do with these sports? I don't have a TV. I don't care. So there you go. But everybody loves her, and she's terrific. Bulls lose to Pistons. Okay, there's the sports report. You do a little better. You like sports.
I appreciate it.
All right, so tell us, what are they teaching at school? Joel calls in. Are you doing economics? Are you doing accounting? What are you doing?
Well, last semester I took accounting. And it was more just like foundational accounting.
The full workbook, you know, where you get the workbook and the debits to the window and credits to the door, that type of thing?
We did mainly like balance sheets and big picture stuff. So I'm not in the business school, but okay. I still took accounting, so it was like the non-business school version. So it was a little bit less numbery and more just theoretical and making sure you understand the concepts.
It was funny, I took back when, Notre Dame to this day, I don't think has a problem with people taking electives into different areas, right? I mean, I know some of the schools are the point. When you apply to Indiana, do you apply for a certain school or you just get in?
Both. You can apply directly into the business school or like the media school or something, or you could also just apply into like undecided like general arts and sciences.
Is that a disadvantage?
Not really. I mean, if you want to, probably only for the business school, because Indiana with the Kelley Business School, it is one of the best in the country. So it is a little bit. You do want to try to get in through high school because it's not impossible to get in. If you're not in the school after your freshman year, but it is a little bit hard.
But you can't just go over and, if you're in the undecided, whatever that means, go over and like sign up for all the business courses.
You could. You can take...
And get in?
Not into the school, but you can get into the courses.
Okay. So, but in Illinois, I think they don't let you do that. Really? They make it very difficult. Mm-hmm. Because they're pretty much jammed up. I mean, well, I was in economics. There was business economics in Notre Dame, and then there was arts and letters economics, social science. That's the one I was in, where I had to struggle through three semesters of a language, and Jack, me and languages ain't so hot, buddy. I managed to bail out after two, and they gave me a break because they said I fought the fight. It was obvious I had no talent for languages, as people can tell when they listen to me. But I was able to take the full year accounting class. My stepfather was an accountant, and he's just... Take the basic course where you actually have to sit there for a whole year and get your problems and realize that everything is a double entry. Somebody gives you some money. It's got to go here. What is it? Over here. Who do you owe? And when I got to grad school, and a lot of people didn't have any accounting, and they did the big picture accounting, not one person there had any idea of the depth of the subject that I did just by taking the 1 year, the real boring. You actually got the workbook. You got the book, and then there's the workbook that you had to fill out over the course of the semester. New pages 3 and 4 in the workbook, and you're like, oh, God. But it actually laid a basis for every time. So now even today, when something happens in somebody's firm or in mine, I can say, no, wait a minute. You get this sheet of paper, and every time something happens, you put something over here and something over here. And it's, you really never lose it if you learn it the basic way. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you know, it becomes... a bunch of computer runs, and you know it's hard to get the actual basic thing to it, if you know what I mean.
Right.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
But now nobody wants to do that. Why would you want to sit there all year and scribble stuff in actually with a pencil? You know, my writing was so bad, but I'm glad you're taking all this stuff because it forms a base. Mm-hmm. That you so what is your major going to be, what then?
It's in media.
Okay. Cool. Well, that's why you're here, obviously.
Yeah.
What did you tell everybody when you said you were a producer of a show?
Yeah, I mean, they didn't really know much about it just because I'm really, like, the only person that I know that's really doing media that's, like, in my friend group. But they all thought it was interesting. They all thought it was pretty cool, especially because it deals with economics as well, which a lot of people that I'm friends with are interested in.
So what do you think the Fed's doing now that you're quizzing you about economics, pouring so much money into the system on allegedly repos?
I mean, I'm not really sure. I don't follow too much on that, but
so you guys don't waver into current events when they're talking.
I mean, we do a little bit. It's just even though I still do take some business courses and I did take accounting, it's still not my strong suits.
Okay, well, yeah, you'll get there.
I usually leave that discussions to the business majors.
Is there still such a fanatic group of people with the basketball?
Yes. Big basketball state.
One of our first clients back in 1991, this is back in the time of No, we had to use the tape. The TV didn't tape anything.
Mm-hmm.
Well, these guys in Indiana, well, they all had moved to Phoenix. So there was a group of like six of them. They had a choreography. Everybody had a turn to tape the game.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had to drop it from there into somebody's mailbox. That was your job.
Uh-huh.
Then the next guy had to watch it like within the next hour and a half or two, because you fast forward through the commercials. And he had to take it and drop it to the next guy. So by midnight or by the next night, everybody got to watch the game the night before.
Right.
Because, you know, these guys were in Scottsdale. I mean, they were fanatic about it. And this is right after Bobby Knight.
Right.
But they really haven't had a championship. They gone to the Final Four since Bobby Knight? They did once, didn't they?
We made it to the, I think it was, can't remember if it was Elite Eight or Final Four when we had Oladipo. We were the one seed.
That's right. Well, who's on this year? Where you played? Where you think you are?
Big
Ten is tough.
We're a borderline top 25 team right now.
All right, so you're better than the Irish, but you're not as good as is Purdue the class of the Big Ten or Michigan?
Probably Michigan. Michigan State.
Those guys always have pretty good teams.
Yeah.
SP futures were I'm surprised we're draining yesterday. It looks like we're draining a little today. Down 175. Nasdaq futures down 750. All the gold stocks are up again. GLD's up 62 cents. GDX up 19. We'll be right back. Should have Mr. Kenny Pulcheri.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Look at them yo-yos. That's the way you do it.
Stocks and Jocks. Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now.
Look at them yo-yos. That's the way you do it. You play the guitar on the MTV.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen with Jack Silverman on the board. Kenny, we have you, buddy. S&P futures down 250. NASDAQ futures down 950 now. Happy New Year, buddy.
Hey, Happy New Year to you. How are you?
I'm doing good. Hanging in there. It's we got some ice and snow last night. It was, see, now you don't have to worry about this in Florida. But last night I go work out and I'm walking toward my truck, Kenny, and you can see it was, the temperature was just dropping in the wind. And it rained a little bit, and you could see the spots on the pavement where it was still wet, and then the spots where it wasn't exactly wet, you had to be careful of. It was right where they were all freezing. I'm walking along. You had to pay attention to where you were doing. You know, where else you might land on your head, type of thing. So you have to worry about that.
I don't have to do that around here. It's only been raining for the last couple of days, but otherwise it's been beautiful.
I saw you on CNBC. Were you in New York, or do you have a place down there?
No, I was doing it remote.
When they mentioned you're
from Florida, from Palm Beach.
How long is the beard going to last in Florida?
I think the beard's going to last for a while. I mean, listen, I like the way the beard looks, and it's not the beard. You know, contrary to what people think, the beard doesn't make you hot. Even in the sunshine, you know, it's like having a head of hair.
Well, yeah,
but it's fine. I like the way the beard looks, especially with a tan.
Well, you know, you look very professorial, sort of like a.
I do have to get it trimmed though. It's a little bit too thick now. I gotta trim it down.
So somewhat professorial, some of it a kind of an Italian Hemingway kind of thing. By the way, I was thinking about you on break, as I saw some guy using a Flex Seal to fix a hole in his yacht.
Yeah. I see those commercials all the time. You gotta laugh.
I can see you with some million-dollar yacht using Flex Seal to fix a hole in the thing. You know, just
the guy that makes the glass boat and he puts it all together with Flex Seal. And then he drives it on the he drives it on the pond or the lake or whatever.
He drives it over the alligators. He was in the bayou to one guy. He used it on the bottom of his what do you call those airboats?
Yeah. Like the what do they call them? The ones in the Everglades.
Yeah. So if the stuff didn't work,
on the back of them.
Yeah, if stuff didn't work, he was going to be eaten alive by some gator.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Kenny, what do you make of yesterday? I was kind of somewhat surprised. You know what I heard on the way in this morning? I was stunned. They were giving the market report, and the lady says we got soybeans up, corn up. It looks like inflation's on its way back. I almost drove into the pile on the side of the road. I mean, I haven't heard that term from anybody other than you and me in ages.
I think that's going to be a term we hear more about, though, in 2020. I do think that we're going to hear more about inflation in 2020. I don't think it's going to get out of control at all, but I think we're going to hear more talk of inflation.
You ever hear
about one or the other? I don't think there was anything unnecessarily unusual about the action yesterday. With the market sold off a little bit, so what? It's up, 15% in the last 3 months. And it's up 30, NASDAQ's up 35, and the S&P's up 28 or whatever it's up.
Yeah.
The last couple of days, I don't expect much today. I think global markets Asian markets were a little bit lower overnight, and European markets started off today a little bit lower. But I don't think that's any reason to panic at all by anybody.
No.
And that's it. I think, you have to look forward now into the next day, into the next year.
What do you think in terms of, if, as usual, I'm managing money for people, and you get to scramble. And it's just the way retail is, Kenny. You're not going to change people. Everybody wants to know who they want to go with the hottest hand last year.
Right.
And yet, research back to when I was in school, which is a long time ago, says that you almost want to go with the cold hand from last year because it's really hard to do it two years in a row.
Yeah, I would agree with you. That's why, it's so interesting. We were talking about the Dow theory. And about how, you end up putting money into the underperformers of 1 year because they're due to outperform the next. And I think that's going to be a lot of the story. Look, tech is going to continue to be hot. We're going into 5G next year, which is going to once again change the world all over again. So tech is going to continue to be a focus for sure, as it was this year. It was the outperformer, right? It was up, almost 50%.
Yep.
The XLK was up almost 50%. This year with individual names, Apple is up 85%, a bunch of semi names up better than 50%. And so it's exciting. And I think it's going to continue to be exciting. But I think, and you and I talked about this last week, I think energy is going to be a real space. It's all of a sudden lifting its head. It's had a tough year. Prices were down. Demand destruction, or talk of demand destruction, talk of lack of demand, talk of the trade issues, all that stuff putting pressure on energy. I think suddenly energy is going to raise its, I think energy is going to raise its head and be very exciting next year in 2020.
I have a, I don't usually give, predictions, A, because I'm not that good at them, B, because it's not what I do anyway with my registrations, but I honestly, I kind of gave a little one yesterday, Kenny. I think that I have some people in the XLE, which, you know, they're probably not all that happy about that, but the last couple of months have been doing okay. But I can see, I don't think the XLE, meaning the oil stocks in the Dow, have participated enough with oil coming back to 62. Right? I think there's another, you know, 5 to 10 cent, 10%. In other words, XLE is $60 roughly. I could see it 67. I don't see going out 5, 10 years, you know, oil going back to 100 and that thing going back to 90, though. I just don't.
No, I don't think it's, I don't necessarily think that that's going to do that either, especially as, you know, the world gets more and more, you know, as we start to turn more and more alternative powers, certainly cars and electric vehicles and all that stuff. There is going to be a certain level of destruction in terms of the demand for oil, but I still think that it's a place where you should have some dollars allocated. I think there are some great names in there, you know, ExxonMobil, Chevron. Not only are they great big Americana names, but they're, you know, they're nice dividend plays as well. So you have that dividend strategy in there as well. Doesn't necessarily mean you should be overweight energy, because I agree with you. I don't think there's any reason to see oil to go back to $80 or $90 a barrel at all. We're awash in oil. We know that. But I think at least for the next, you know, certainly for 2020, I actually think it's going to be exciting for some reason. I get it in my gut. It just feels like it's lifting its head after having had a tough year.
I'm going to say something. This is not going to sound nasty. I was listening to a lot of the people on CNBC, and you always have a different point of view. That's why I love listening to you. But once one person on the table of people at lunch said something about energy 3 weeks ago, everybody's jumped on the energy bandwagon. And by the way, I happen to agree with you, but I don't see anything that's changed in the last 4 months, where 4 months ago everybody thought it was lousy, and now all of a sudden it's good. If I were to put Kenny Pulcheri into the professor classroom, when you talk about degradation going forward, by the way, I agree with you because I only see the U.S. But if we were to do a chart and you and I were to say, okay, long term, every time somebody gets, well, sometimes an electric car, depending on what their power plant's burning, but we won't go into that.
Right.
Probably there's going to be some degradation here. Obviously, if I go out and buy a new truck, it's going to make better gas mileage than my old truck. I mean, I get that. But if we were to compare that to all the rest of the places in the world that are developing, where people don't even own a car and maybe would like one, would our demand destruction be more than the rest of the world? Maybe demand enhancement.
It's an interesting conversation to have, because on top of everything else, unless you're talking about complete third world countries, but you know, in other places around the world, as we start to become much more aware of climate change and this whole conversation about climate control and fossil fuels and all that stuff, I think there is going to be a certain level of destruction. And even in those places in the world where you're talking about enhancement, if the technology, in my mind, gets sophisticated enough in terms of alternative technologies, then you may see those people that want a car and need a car are really going to end up turning to either smaller cars like they have in Europe, or they're going to turn to electric vehicles. I think there's going to be a huge breakthrough in electric vehicles and the way that they're not only produced, but the way that they function. Now, certainly in some of those countries, you have to have the energy to charge the car.
Right.
I get that. But I think that's going to be part of the change in technology as we move into the 20s.
Well, if you double the amount of cars in Mexico and half of them are going to be electric, and you burn oil in the power plants, you haven't gotten anywhere. You might as well burn it in the car.
Well, that's right. If you have to burn oil to create electricity, but if there are other forms, right, whether it's solar, whether it's wind power, even ocean, you talk about creating energy just from the movement of the ocean, right? That there, that now they're starting to talk about. So there's going to be other sources. That's what I mean. I think it's going to be a very, very dynamic time in the next decade over so many things. But I think energy and the way that the world is powered is going to change dramatically over the next decade.
Well, I agree with you, and I'm actually looking forward to it, Kenny. I mean,
yeah, you know, listen, I was writing my note this morning, and I was just laughing because, you know, as a kid, you grew up, when we were kids and you grew up and you heard people talk about the past, what it was, and all you can remember is the roaring 20s of the 20th century, right, 1920 to 1929, and you see the stories, and you saw the way the people lived and how they get dressed and how they lived, and it was the roaring 20s, and I wonder if we're going to have that same, a century later, if 2020s are going to be defined as the roaring 20s of the 21st
century. Kenny, we got a dash, but happy to, and by the way, why would you take your wife out to dance like in the roaring 20s when you can both look at your cell phone all night long?
Good night. Happy New Year.
Take care of yourself, buddy. SP Futures down 375 now. NASDAQ Futures down 14. Right back, Mr. Carl Denninger.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at ptisecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@ptisecurities.com. That's john@ptisecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Here, right now, right here, right now,
right now. There's something happening.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley, Mr. Jack Silverman back on the board. We have Mr. Carl Denninger. S&P futures down 75 cents. NASDAQ futures down 550. Happy New Year, Carl. How are you?
Well, you know, it's not New Year yet, but I'm doing great.
Well, it probably is someplace.
Well, that's true. I mean, you know, if you're on the right side of the dateline, right?
Yeah. So the song we play on the way in to this thing, the truer words never spoken. There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. Was that the... You can play that pretty much in any era, right?
And it seems as though we'll see how far they manage to get in this next decade before the reality bat comes along and starts bashing people over the head.
So you're a follower of the decade changes tonight theory.
Well, yeah, I suppose. I mean, you know. Yes, only because of how we number calendars.
So, I would agree.
I mean, does it really matter? I mean,
no,
you know,
no.
when the decile number rolls from 1 to 2, then we can have the argument over, okay, when's 0, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, does it really matter? I don't think so.
No, it doesn't. I used it, unfortunately, as sort of an example to where everybody's convinced of their opinion without realizing that, well, okay, if you believe that way, by the way, I'm happy to agree with you, that you have to roll with the first decade was only 9 years. I mean, which is fine with me. But if you do, then that's the consequence. And that's seemingly the problem we're having when the left and fights with the right and stuff. If your opinion is, if you hold a certain opinion, it might be okay, and it might be the one you and I agree with, but if you do, then it means this other thing also has to be true, and people kind of deny the other thing sometimes, and therein lies the crux of some of the arguments we're having. We don't look through the consequences of what we're saying a little bit, maybe more than a little bit. Is that a fair assumption?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Yeah.
I was thinking of you yesterday as one of the listeners. How is it that everybody knows about this Chapwood Index but me? And I'm supposed to know this stuff anyway. One of our guys sends me this thing, and God, I knew that they had monkeyed with the index, but some of the stuff in their introduction here, let me read this for a second, Carl, not to bore you because you already know it. While the CPI was originally a measure to evaluate a predefined, consistently weighted basket of goods, over time the basket of goods grew to an unreasonable 80,000 items. How the hell do you keep track of 80,000? Muting dramatic price changes in common goods and services. By adding too many layers of complexity and algorithms, you lose the organic real results in a muddled mix of diluted data. As soon as I read that, I go, Carl will love that. A muddled mix of diluted data. I love that. Perhaps even more dangerous have been the changes in the way CPI is calculated and consistent manipulation to keep government expenditures down and mislead public with information. And they talk about two discrete times here. And I don't remember these, Carl. 1983... The government
right.
CPI rose 12%, and the government modified the calculation to save money. In order to save money on salary increases and entitlement benefits, which are tied to CPI, the government changed their calculation of CPI to reflect a much lower number. But then they go on to talk about this, and this one I should remember, 1995-96, the Boskin Commission? What the hell was that?
Yeah, so essentially there were two major changes that were made to how the CPI was done. The Boskin Commission was essentially another one of those, you know, things like the Greenspan Commission, right? Or if I use my preferred name for him, Greed Scam.
Yeah, yeah.
and essentially the point of these so-called revisions was exactly as pointed out in the article, which is that what you used to have were two problems in terms of how CPI was used. one by the government, and that Social Security benefits in particular are linked to it. But the other thing that became a very serious problem in the early 1980s or late 1970s is that most union wage contracts were linked to it.
Right.
Okay, so you had wage push inflation that was being driven by the fact that the government, you know, government spending and deficits and the impact of this index were getting out of control. So they did a number of things. One of them was they started monkeying with the percentage contributions. Okay, now that is actually, to some extent, that has been helped a little bit in the last few years, and that they took a little bit of that away in a couple of places, specifically in health insurance, which used to be considered only 0.6% weighting. It's laughable.
Yeah, yeah.
But even so, today you have the health industry, the medical industry generally is almost 20% of GDP. It's like 19.6 now, I think, at last look. And yet they claim it's 7%.
Not even okay. 7, it's like 6.8.
Yeah, so I mean, yeah. it's that's insanity, okay? And then the second thing is you have this thing that they call hedonic adjustment that they put in there. Now, if you take a look at the CPI index numbers, which is supposedly the difference in price from either 1982 or 1984, depending on which base year you're using, those two are not all that far apart. If you look at new automobiles, just as an example, alright, and then take the price of a new car in 1984 and multiply it by that percentage and tell me where you can buy one for that price.
Well, you can't. I mean, it's not even close.
Well, right. It's off by multiples. Okay, so this is, you know, this is all part of how do we cook the numbers, and they do it two ways. One of them is this hedonic adjustment nonsense. And then, you know, the logic behind hedonic adjustment is not stupid. It's that what ends up happening is that the older product or service without the so-called improvement is no longer available. So you don't have a choice to buy that anymore. That option disappears. So it's like, you know, they say, well, you know, televisions are so much better than they used to be because now they're flat panel, they have better resolution, they don't use as much energy, they don't, you know, create as much heat in your room, blah, 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 blah. Okay, you know, all fine and well, except what if I want an old-style CRT tube TV? They don't make them. So I either pay for the so-called higher quality or I don't get it at all.
Well, on the one hand, I agree, but I think there should be, there needs to be some sort of a rational adjustment. For instance, I mean, in Chicago, as we finally got the salt, this probably has to be the longest we've ever gone without a full barrage of salt trucks, but they're out this morning because we had the freezing rain last night. I have to believe that it changed in like 1993 or so. All of a sudden cars started to use, was it corrugated? You know more about this than me. Anyway, cars don't really rust anymore.
Well, they started using galvanized metal. Yeah.
So, I will say this, that a car that you bought in 1995, there was a dramatic improvement over one in 85 because you're going to get 10 years out of it and not four. So, I mean, there needs to be a little bit of an adjustment on something like that, I would guess, but not like you're saying double.
Well, that's true, but remember, the cost of galvanized steel as opposed to non-galvanized steel is one of the $100.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I said little adjustment. I didn't say double. I mean, but these numbers, these guys here, they go on to say the CPI increase from 2008 to 2012 was a total of 10.2%. Their research has found that in many cities, the cost increase was more than that in 2012 alone. So we're not even on the same somewhat page. But, you know, let me ask you this. Without being lobbing all kinds of arrows at my fellow people on radio and TV, is it strictly an age thing, Carl, that people, everybody remembers the last two or three years of that, I'll use the term fiasco, with the inflation, where the inflation, I'm going to say, in the early 80s, Paul Volcker again, he just died, I'm not going to tromp on the grave, I think he didn't understand, and maybe a lot of people didn't until it was over, the incredible lagging indicator that even a straight CPI is. And I think that the last two or three years, there really was not much inflation. yet it was still percolating its way through the numbers. Just like maybe this time, it's there, you and I see it, and yet it's not coming through their numbers yet. I think he could have taken his foot off the pedal probably a year and a half before he did. He probably could have saved half the savings and loans, and we'd have got to the same place. But at the end of it, everybody talks about the labor push that you just mentioned, that people had stuff in their union contracts. Because at Pullman, I'm the one who did the union contracts. You know, the inflation was up 2% the last quarter. I would adjust our Amtrak price. I would adjust our Boston price. Our $15 million contract with Boston was now, you know, $15,003,000 or $30,000 or something. And oh, by the way, all the union guys went from $9.50 an hour to $9.55. So, I mean, I'm the one who did all that. But what I'm saying is, when this all started in the late 60s, early 70s, the unions, they didn't go retroactively get these contracts. I mean, they I'll use the term, suffered under this crap for probably 5 years before they said, wait a minute. we're not gonna go through this BS where we get a 5% raise and at the end of the year, inflation's 10% and we actually got a 5% decrease. I mean, they figured it out, but they didn't figure it out the first 5 years of this. It was only near the end, right? It was the last contract. Not anywhere.
Yeah, it was, well, it wasn't. I mean, they figured it out fairly quickly, but the big problem with all of this is that, you know, now, the unions are basically, for all intents and purposes, they're gone, other than SEIU and the government union.
Yeah.
Okay, so your teachers' unions and things like this. But, by the way, any government union is, by definition, a fraudulent edifice, because you're bargaining against yourself.
Well, I agree. But let's save that for another time.
But nonetheless, yeah. the real problem is, everyone says, well, you know, gee, that was a cause of, you know, of a huge part of this inflation issue. No, it wasn't. The reason you had the problem in the first place was that the government was doing things that were not funded, and the Federal Reserve was sitting back and allowing bubbles to be blown. All right. And then on top of that, you had the disruption that came from the Arab oil embargo, which was real.
They weren't just sitting back. They were funding it. They were pouring money into the system.
Well, yeah. But look at what they're doing now. Look,
right.
Last fiscal year, the federal government ran a 5.1% fiscal deficit.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Well, that's 5.1% inflation. Now, where it shows up in the economy is not necessarily under their control, but that there was 5.1% inflation last fiscal year is a fact.
Carl, if it was even, they wouldn't want it. If all of us walked into our local Fed with a dollar bill and walked out, who's even on the $2 bill? I don't know. And walked out with a $2 bill and everything doubled, nobody'd want it, because everybody would either A, participate or not participate. You want it because it's very uneven. I mean, I promise to keep this brief. I was telling you I was doing the stuff for all the union contracts, right? Well, guess what? I'm non-exempt? I'm a salary guy, right? Whatever the hell I am. So
right.
Pullman says, okay, salaried people, the raises are going to be between 3% and 5%. I'm going, well, that's swell. the other guys are getting 8% before they even get their merit raise. So I go into my boss and he goes, by the way, you've done a great job this year. We're going to give you 5%. And I'm like, well, what are the girls saying, Caddyshack? Well, thanks for nothing.
Right.
What do you mean 5%? Everybody else is getting 12. No, everybody else is getting like 4, 4.5. You're getting 5. I go, well, that's not the everybody I'm dealing with. So I'm getting 5. So I ended up with like a 7% cut that year. You know, so I'm like, if I wasn't the guy actually doing the calculations, it probably wouldn't have dawned on me. But clearly, I was the wrong guy to give that message to. But that's all I got, though, was 5%. So I mean,
right.
if you weren't part of that package, you were in bad shape. I mean, if you didn't get those kinds of increases. But
look at what's going on now. Is that it's all in it, where it's showing up is in places that you have absolutely no control over, and yet everyone is, you know, is running around saying, oh, you know, well, look at Donald Trump. You know, are we going to get a tweet today about absolutely no inflation? The Fed ought to do more QE.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm sure. Everybody, you hear it 10 times a day on any financial TV.
Well, yeah, I have. Why I don't pay much attention to it anymore, because it's a joke. All right, I mean, these guys are all running around. Oh, you know, best economy and blah blah blah. Yeah, okay. If you happen to be at the very top, yeah, it is, because you get to steal all the money.
Well, look at the prices, Carl. Yeah. Look at how it's squeezing out this time, though. Isn't it astounding when you look at? I never thought one of the places it would squeeze out. I mean, obviously, it's in. To me, it looks like it's going to. Healthcare, obviously. I mean, that's the big orangutan in the room. But it's going to, in this area, it's all going to taxes, primary education through property taxes, every kind of fee on earth. These guys will raise a fee for a toll road, you know, 30% and think nothing of it, even though inflation's supposed to be 2%, right? I mean, it really is something, but I'm stunned at the amount of money that has gone into amusement. I would never have guessed that. That didn't happen at all last time. Last time I went into oil, and everything having to do with travel, anything, food, because it had to be delivered and processed, and agricultural
right.
stuff, because you had to dry it with natural gas that was going way up. See, that was the, what do you get, like a staph infection? The infection goes right for the weak spot. That was the weak spot back then. Now the weak spot appears to be healthcare and amusement. I mean, the idea that, you know, a major league pitcher, the idea that the Sox are going to pay their catcher, you know, like $15 million, whatever it is, $12 million next year. If I go out and get a sandwich for lunch, I got to pay a tax to pay for their stadium. To me, is unconscionable. If they can afford to pay a guy $15 million, they don't need my 3 cents for my sandwich. I mean, you would think. But I mean, look at the price of major league teams. They've gone up, what are they, up three? They got to be up three times in the last 15 years.
Well, yeah, and I mean, it's just, yeah, some of these. But then again, you look at what's happening with property taxes, and you know, I just pointed out in an article that I put up a couple of days ago that I lived in Chicago for 13 years, okay, and during that time I owned two pieces of real estate, you know, different times, and the townhouse that I owned near Wrigleyville, it's not an ostentatious place. But you can look it up on Zillow right now and you know, get the property tax history and the so-called price history. You got to have $90,000 worth of income to be able to just manage to pay the property taxes.
Oh, yeah.
and own that place.
Well, how, Carl, I mean,
how in the devil do you do that if you're a middle-class person?
Well, yeah, but how do you, if you were to do a, one of the new guests on the show is, I don't know if you listen to Jan Flanagan, who is an instructor and a lawyer at, Chicago Title and Trust for a long time, so he knows how all this stuff works, and he's been educating us on some interesting things. I mean, here you got a city in Chicago that if you look at above the ground, I mean, high up, all you see are cranes in areas where Google's moving in, McDonald's is moving in. You see growth almost at an unprecedented level where people are moving into the city. It's becoming kind of a little San Francisco where kids from other places coming out of college moving here. They don't want a car. They just want to live close. They entertain close. I mean, and you see that incredible, and yet the rest of the areas down here where the exchanges are, the city relentlessly is raising taxes in these buildings that are 40% occupied and 50. And you look downstairs, the Starbucks leaving, the CVS is leaving, because they got the double net lease, and they're dropping the taxes on these guys, and they're going, you know, screw this. And it's like, on the one hand, we're pouring really, really good porridge in the top of the pot, and we forgot to, like a boat, we forgot to put the plug in on the bottom, and stuff's running out the bottom. I don't know if we're gaining or losing. But honestly,
you're losing, because like one of the things I pointed out is I took a look at, you know, like the assessments on the buildings where I used to have my company, right, during the time that I was running it there in Chicago. And today, just from that, plus the additional employment costs, and the mandated minimum wages, you know, all this nonsense that's going on in Chicago, plus all the fees and everything else. I had a 37% pre-tax operating margin for several years there. Okay? That's, I mean, you think about it,
that's
in a business that deals with the public, that's a crazy good number, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right. Do you realize that today, with the same sales numbers, the same sort of, you know, in cost of technology, everything else, which, of course, you know, it wouldn't be. There's some differences. I'd actually have a negative operating margin. I couldn't run the company.
No. It's the CVS across the street that was in the 175, the insurance exchange building, which at one time, well, I think now it's still the third biggest building in the city, square footage. It's a full square block, like maybe 15, 20 stories, one of those kind of things. It looks like a merchandise mart, only about a quarter the size type of thing. But anyway, these guys had a CVS that whenever you walked in there, the place is mapped. I don't know how many prescriptions they must have had because it's on the way to two train stations. And
right.
From what I understand, not that I know this stuff, Carl, you know, I got guys, but their rent was $17.5 a month, which evidently they were reasonably happy with. But they did a net-net, I believe, and again, I'm getting these numbers secondhand, and over a period of the 15 years they'd been there, the net-net part was $240 a year. It was another $20,000 a month. It was more than the rent.
Yeah.
And they go, we can't handle it. We're gone.
Well, I went back and I looked at, because, you know, I had a triple net lease, okay? And I went back and I looked at the numbers, and then, you know, what are they now? I about fell out of my chair.
Well, the cash, I mean, it's just, I think it's part of a lot of the, I think sometimes a lot of the strife and a lot of the, I use the term, bitterness, I won't go so far as hatred, although I think some people are over that line. A lot of that you see, a lot of the racial stuff, a lot of the things that are coming back that we thought were kind of dead. To me, Carl, it's usually economic. And I think some people got this idea that there's takers in this world and there's givers. And the people that are giving are tired of giving. Because if you don't ever get a raise, and sometimes I'll talk to teachers and people and I'll say, well, you know, you got to give, and they'll say, you know, I can't believe people are so against us getting a raise. And I go, okay, I'll calm down for a second. I mean, nobody is really against anybody getting a raise, except if they're the people that are paying for it and they don't have the commensurate raise, that nobody will care if you get a 3% raise if they get a 4% raise or even a 3.5% or maybe even a 3%. But if they get nothing, they get nothing and you keep telling them how much you deserve and they haven't gotten squat, that starts to go over, you know, like a gong somewhere at some point. It's just a bad message. And you sort of have to, you know, understand my mother's cousin in Ohio. Now, Ohio is a little bit different than Illinois. He actually, what do you call the guys that work for, like, the water pumping department? They're not really plumbers. They're water engineers, I guess, or mechanics. I don't know what they are. But the guys that keep the huge pumps running. Well, this guy was head of that union, and he's one of the nicest men you've ever come across. He said, we actually never made as much as a union plumber, not even close. He goes, and the deal was, it was a steady job, and we got a nice pension. He goes, but we could have beat up on the city a lot more. We never did. We never went on strike. We always went to the mayor and said, okay, we think we deserve this. What can you guys pay? And we landed somewhere in the middle. We never struck. We never did anything. I said, his name's Johnny. I said, Johnny, you just have to understand. I said, I'm your cousin. I love you. We've loved each other since birth. I said, but there's going to come a time when you mention the word pension, you're going to be the only guy in a cocktail party that has one and knows what it means, and the rest of the people are going to say, I'm paying it. And when, how did you get one? That's just the way the world's going. It's not because they don't like you. They're like, it's not fair. It's just there's people feel all I do is pay. And it's hard to shake people from that because you know what, Carl? It's not when you walk out of some place and you got some smirking kid who dropped a $75 parking ticket on you because they claim you're an inch over too close to the fire hydrant and you know you're not. Or whatever it's 75 or 150, whatever the hell it is, and he thinks it's a big joke, and you don't think it's a big joke. I mean, it becomes oppressive. I mean, and I think we're there.
Well, yeah, and the thing is, it's the ratcheting of all of those costs that you look at, and yet they're hidden in the numbers. The government ignores them. They act like they don't exist. But, you know, then you have all of these people running around rah-rahing how everything is so wonderful and beautiful. And you're sitting there, wait a minute, bacon just doubled in price in the last year and a half. What are you talking about? You know, I just want my breakfast, dang it.
the odd part, Carl, is that the people that are doing it, and I'm going to be blunt, it's New Year's Eve. The people doing this are so goddamn ignorant. But they don't understand that you can only steal something from somebody once. I mean, even the local saloon that Maddie and I go to, the Triple E Tap. Well, now you can't park in front. Well, they finally took it away on Sunday. You can park there on Sunday. You can't park in front of the place without paying, no matter what, if it's 8:00 at night. So they used to get, I'm going to say, 5-6 couples a night that were going to dinner. They'd pull in front. They'd walk in. They'd say hello. They'd have one drink. then they'd head off to dinner. Okay.
Right.
Well, now that doesn't happen because you got to pay $2 to walk in, and not only do you have to, you know, get out of your car, pay the thing, walk in, but now you're also taxing the hell out of the Tripoli tap. So if you steal money away from him for the meter, and you have five people less a night that will go in there because they don't want to stop for the meter, you're only shooting yourself in the foot for how much you can charge the Tripoli tap. There's only, at some point this becomes, if you make it so that people can't go out to a restaurant because it costs $8 to park in front of the place for 2 hours, you lose the revenue you're getting from the restaurant. I mean, at some point you got to say, I'm only getting, it's like gambling. How many different types of ways can you gamble? All you do, if you start out with a new lottery, you just steal from the old lottery. I mean, there's got to be somebody that understands that, and evidently we don't have anybody that does.
Well, I think really where the problem comes from is that you have people that say, well, I got 3% this year, I deserve 3% next year.
Yeah.
Okay. And so, they say, well, it's just 3%. Okay, well, were you a sweep in math class in middle school?
Yeah.
You know? Because if you weren't, then you know what happens over a period of 10 or 15 years. And yet, people say, oh, you know, it's not the big deal. Somebody will pick it up.
Hold that thought, buddy. SP Futures down 75 cents, NASDAQ Futures down 750. Right back, Mr. Carl Denninger.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain?
Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Blowing up back Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ollies. Mr. Jack Silverman on the board. I'm reading this headline. Ousted Nissan chairman Carlos Ghosn confirms he's left Japan, says he escaped injustice, borrowed one of Carl Denninger's spare Gulfstreams, and flew to Lebanon. You got a spare, Carl?
One of my spare Gulfstreams.
Carl was in the co-pilot seat, he says, flying across the Pacific, stopped at Midway. Relive the battle. SP Futures down 2. SP Futures down 11.25. You read these headlines and you got a... Trump says Iran will be held fully responsible for attack on the U.S. Embassy in Iraq. God's sake, Carl. Can anybody figure out when we started bombing people over there? How do we figure out who's against and who's for us in this day and age? I can't even get out. You know, anyway, NASDAQ futures down 10.75. We got the Dow down 8 bucks. Notable stocks in the Dow. Apple's down 87 cents. It was down like 4 hours yesterday and flipped to the upside. So Apple's like the only stock in the Dow that was actually up yesterday. Go figure. But anyway, over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 88.6%, FTSE down 44.6%, CAC down 4, that's flat. Over in Asia, we've got Shanghai up 10.3%, Hang Seng down 129, that's 0.4%. Bonds, we're back up to 1.90 on the 10-year. Bund is coming back here, Carl. They're from minus 0.78, I'm going to say, where are we, New Year's Eve. I'm going to say Labor Day, they were minus 0.78. Now they're minus 0.18, which is a pretty... I don't know what percentage that is. You can't figure that out, but it's a pretty reasonable move towards zero. Japan is back to minus 0.02. They were minus 0.29 for really years. So they're almost back to zero. So a little bit of movement there. We've got oil down 45 cents, 61.23. The big natural gas, 217. Carl, I got people telling me they think it's going to be under $2 by summer. I don't know if they're going to be right or not, but they... gold up 510, 15.23. Are we sniffing... I've had a really nice week in the gold after the thing not moving it for me for like 3 years, Carl. All of a sudden, last month, it decided to move. I'm not so sure if I was right or stubborn, but I'm glad I hung in there. Jack, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
Well, right now, we're looking pretty good on the traffic front. Besides, we have one major block up on the I-80 to the Dan Ryan. All lanes are currently blocked due to a car fire on I-57 North between Sibley Boulevard and 127th Street. We will keep you updated on that one. Besides that, we're looking pretty good. We do have a crash with injuries on Mannheim Road at Seymour Ave. So that is causing a couple minutes of backup. But besides that, we're doing all right. The earlier crash on the Kennedy has been cleared up and it's been upgraded to only a 5-minute delay. And besides that, we're all good. In weather, Chicago... It is currently 25 degrees and cloudy. The snow has passed and we're looking clear for the rest of the day. The high is 32. In Phoenix, it's a little bit nicer. It's currently 47 and cloudy with a high of 62. In sports, in the NBA, the Bulls were not able to handle the reigning MVP, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and fell to the Bucks 123-102. And the Suns were able to beat the Portland Trailblazers 122-116 due to a 39-point fourth quarter. In hockey, both Chicago and Arizona teams were off, but they're both on tonight. The Blackhawks visit the Calgary Flames at 8 p.m. Chicago time, and the Arizona Coyotes host the St. Louis Blues at 7 p.m. Arizona time. In college basketball, there's numerous Chicago sports playing. the University of Illinois Chicago lost to Youngstown State 70-64. Loyola Chicago beat Valparaiso 66-63. Chicago State lost to Missouri 33-91. Southern Illinois lost to Indiana State 56-68. And finally, DePaul lost to Seton Hall 66-74. Chief.
DePaul lost to the Hall, eh?
Yes, they did.
Well, it's DePaul's having a pretty good year, though. Hey, Carl, I have a question for you. You're the only one who comes on the show that knows. What exactly is going to change in, I won't say your life and my life, because you're much more high-tech than me. What does it mean to everybody if we go, if this 5G becomes somewhat available? Does it make that big of a difference? Is it the whole change in our life like everybody's saying it is, or what does it do?
Well, in terms of your mobile, you know, you're walking around with a phone in your hand and, you know, staring at a screen all day long, because that's what all the kids and younger people do, right?
Yep.
And some of us older folks. It's not going to change anything, because the speed that you have to have to deliver, for example, video that is of as high a quality as you can reasonably absorb on a screen of that size is easily met even by the 3G networks. Alright, so in that respect, it's not going to do anything. What it is going to do, though, and where it makes a big difference, is outside of the major cities, where in the suburban areas, where today you can have cable modem access and you have internet at your house that's very fast, and, you know, you can do your Netflix or whatever. That is now going to become available in parts of rural America that are not wired. And that is a huge change, because, you know, if right now, if you need to be connected to do a job, whatever it is, I mean, even if you do the kind of thing I do, you know, I write all day and you know, put a podcast, things like this, I physically cannot do that without a wired broadband connection, because I will run into data problems if I try to do that over my phone.
So you can't use your phone as a hotspot good enough?
I'm going to get into trouble with regards to the carrier saying, well, you know, you used more than 25 gigabytes worth of data this month, therefore we're going to throttle you.
But
they won't turn me off, but I start to have problems with performance and things like this. All of your cell carrier contracts, every one of them says, this is not a replacement for fixed wireless, and for a fixed wireline service. And if you try to use it that way, they will penalize you. They won't throw you off, but you'll end up with, you know, they start throttling your connection. And so 5G is going to make that go away for an awful lot of people, and will make what amounts to mobile wireless essentially the equivalent of cable service.
Okay, so for a long time, somebody living in God knows where, he needed the landline because he didn't really have a cell tower near him. Now he's probably got a cell tower near him. Now he not only doesn't need the landline phone line, he's not going to need the fiber optic cable hookup.
Yeah, and the other thing is that, see, most places, when you get outside those areas where they're wired, and the problem is simply it doesn't make sense for the cable company to pull cable down there because there's not enough customers per mile.
Right.
Okay, it just costs too much. So the answer in most of those places, if you needed that kind of service, was Hughes, which is satellite-based. And the problem with Hughes is Hughes doesn't work if your link has to be symmetrical. They do a lot of caching, and there are a lot of, and on top of that, they have a throttling issue too, because satellite time is very expensive, and, you know, those birds cost a heck of a lot of money. So being able to bring that down into the terrestrial realm takes 90% of that cost out. It means that now all of a sudden those limitations are going to disappear for those people. And so in terms of you walking around in the loop and the service you see on your cell phone is probably not going to do anything at all. If you start talking about, however, you know, you go into rural Kentucky or Tennessee or, you know, Ohio, or Idaho for that matter, you know, flyover country, pretty much the entirety of that area, some of this is being already lit up on low band frequencies. There's two different sets of frequencies that are being used for 5G. Verizon is screaming about they were the first, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, their footprint's the size of a pinprick. And that's because they're using very high frequencies, which in major cities works well, because you don't want, you know, you want the towers to be close together because there's so many darn people. But go out in the middle of BF nowhere, and that's the last thing you want. So companies like T-Mobile are putting this stuff on 600 megahertz, which has excellent penetration into buildings and goes for a very long distance.
Okay. By the way, the switchboard just lit up in People, Ohio, when you group them with people from Tennessee and Kentucky.
Well, you know, hey, there are parts of Ohio that are, you know, I mean, hey, one house per every, you know, mile and a half because it's all full of cornfield. Well,
you know, that's sort of a Midwest phenomenon, as you can tell how people, you know, matriculated west. If you're in Ohio, because I've done a lot of bike trails in Ohio, and you can tell the farms, people got there earlier. The farms are smaller. From any high spot, you can see like five or six farmhouses. You get to Indiana, they're a little more separated. You get to Central Illinois, you might be able to see one. You get to Iowa, all you see is corn, and you see a house like every 3 miles, it seems. It really does spread out. By the way, here's a quote of the day for you. I'm always ready to learn, although I do not always like being taught. That makes sense.
Well, there you go.
Winston Churchill. So can you make head or tail out of what's going on with the Syria, Iraq? When the other day when we started bombing some people over there, I'm like, who the hell are we bombing in Iraq? I mean, there's how many factions are over there? Is the place just, are both of those countries just totally, somebody's got this segment, somebody's got, what's it like to live over there, Carl, for God's sake?
Good Lord. I mean, the things that are going on in that regard, it's just, we have this idea, just back up from it for a minute. Think about what we spend on defense, okay, which of course includes all the money that we spend bombing people.
Right.
And then you take a look at, you know, the worst, the most nefarious country on the face of the planet right now in terms of being a threat to the United States. All the people on the left, they say, Putin, right? Do you know that Russia spends $60 billion a year all in?
Yeah, they don't. China's spending way more, right?
Well, China currently is about 200 and worth 750.
Yeah.
And oh, by the way, on that $60 billion, the Russians claim they've managed to come up with a hypersonic cruise missile.
We never said that we were doing ours efficiently. We spent more.
Well,
money
you know, I guess those $700 toilet seats all of a sudden become a problem, right?
Well, you know, I was a guy who actually had to price out stuff like that one of these days, back in the day, and when we did the a lot of that comes down to management, Carl, because it on the MBTA cars. I was a financial program manager. I kept sending these guys, well, in those days, letters, right? I kept sending them letters. Hey, guys, you know, the production run for the sides, for the end caps and stuff, it's ending like at the end of the month. If you want any spare parts, you got to let me know. I can get you a really good price on the 61st and 62nd. It's no big deal. Of course, I never heard boo from these guys. 6 months later, they sent me this huge list. We need all this crap. And I'm going, the tooling is out in the backyard. So I was being generous, because I knew they'd never order it, because they'd call me up. They were going to call me up and tell me what a bleep I was. Literally, the stuff was four times as expensive as it would have been 3 months before. Due to theirs. So yeah, I could easily have come up with a $500 toilet seat, and guess what? We'd have lost money on it, because we would have had to go get the tooling out of the backyard, rusting out there to make one toilet seat. Or if they just would have said, there's toilets on the cab cars, which were 25 of the cars. We want an extra 50 toilet seats. I could have done it easy when the run was going. I'm not saying that the Pentagon does that, but when you start screwing stuff up, that's what happens. Just saying, you know. I mean,
when you look at the waste, the abuse, and the fraud, and then on top of that, the diversion that goes on.
Oh yeah.
Okay. I mean, you know, foreign aid and things like that. It's insane, and yet, you know, we're sitting here screaming about things. Well, look at the latest thing. You know, you've got people screaming about, well, you know, the Democrats ruined everything with all the homeless people. I did an article on that the other day, too. I'm like, excuse me, what did you expect was going to happen when you made it impossible for the guy to actually make a living pulling your coffee at Starbucks, where he could live in the place where the Starbucks is?
Right. Yeah, no way. No.
What did you think was going to happen? Some percentage of the people that you displace like that are going to lose all hope, and they're going to grab something to numb their pain, because the alternative is they're going to go into the city council chamber, they're going to drag somebody out by their hair and execute them in the street.
Right.
So wouldn't you rather that the guy grabbed a bottle of vodka
Well, that's one of my friend's kids, who happens to be my godson, is in town the last couple nights, and he's graduating. Really a good kid, graduating Santa Clara, and he's got a job, and he was an intern last year, so he's got a real nice job in San Francisco. So I go, how the hell are you going to live in San Francisco? He goes, well, you got to get a big place, and you got like four guys. We're only there for like a year or two, because you want to live close, because the last thing you want to do is commute to San Francisco. You see, because that'll cost you more than, he's talking about his share of the apartment being like 1,700. Four guys.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
it's crazy.
That's a real number. I mean, it's better than living, you know, well, of course, how far south do you got to go on the peninsula to get something cheaper? Someplace you could never commute. And of course, there's no train, or there might be some kind of a train, but it's not like Chicago where they leave, you know, they get in every half hour, like the
Burlington. There's no metro. No, there's no metro.
Why is that? Why doesn't California have a bunch of rail lines around? They should. Well, crap, nobody's got rail lines like Chicago, but.
Well, remember that California is where they, you know, they were going to build that fantastic train, right? They've laid, what, a mile and a half worth of track, a halfway across the bridge or something like that?
Well, most of the rail lines are over in Oakland, though, right? I mean, because there's no rail bridge across the Golden Gate. So there's really no.
Right.
So you really, they don't have the trackage that you do in Chicago. I mean, Chicago's overturned more tracks than most people have ever had. You know, so we have an advantage with that. New York, same way, and Philly. But other than that, but you know, you wonder where all this stuff is kind of heading. We've been talking about it all week, obviously with the new year. I mean, what is are we going to get some solutions to this stuff the next year? Are we still the same? We got a new mayor here in Chicago. Same crap. How much money can you get out of
people?
You're
not going to get answers to this. And look, just look at what's going on right now politically in terms of, you know, because silly season is starting, right? I mean, right. The first of the year, that's, you know, here we go. Now it's election season, so nothing else is going to happen other than people screaming at each other about that. Has there been any legitimate, you know, okay, we're going to actually take care of this out of any of these guys?
No,
side of the aisle. I don't care if you're Democrat or Republican. Have you heard anything that makes any sense?
You might get it from somebody that nobody will listen to. You might. I actually thought that the guy from Ohio, Kasich, had more knowledge than anybody about the healthcare system and might have had a chance. I think a couple of guys running for Democratic stuff are pretty smart, but they're kind of young, and they have strengths in some areas where they could help some stuff out. But in regards to getting the whole battleship to start to turn, first of all, even if the guy did have that kind of knowledge, I mean, you and I have been talking about two or three subjects for an hour, and we get a chance to talk about it as long as we want to. How would you and I go on a debate thing and try and talk to people when there's eight people up there? One guy in the Trump case is insulting the hell out of you, telling your appendages aren't big enough and you're sweating too much. All of a sudden that becomes part of the debate instead of, you know, what you're going to do when you get in. And by the way, that's how you win. When there's eight people up there, you gotta quote, win the debate, not by anything intelligent, but by insulting more than the other person or whatever. I mean, how are we going to get anywhere with that?
I mean, well, that's part of the problem, is that when you take issues that take more than 15 seconds to explain, you try to do that in a debate format, you can't. It's not possible.
But nobody wants to see it on CNBC either.
Well, of course nobody wants to see it on CNBC. CNBC doesn't book people that want to rock the apple cart because it might make the market go down.
Well, right. Well, and most people there are I used to win once in a while, but I could actually, since, you know, I don't have that many clients. I'm not Merrill Lynch, to where I don't want my people doing anything hedging or doing any customization for anybody. I just want everybody long the market. I want to charge them 1.5%, and that's what we do. So any thought that, I think there's an asteroid coming from New York, maybe you should call me up and take some of your money out of the account. There's no way on earth I would ever say that. And I don't have the ability to buy you puts. I don't have the ability to hedge anything. I mean, the whole point is, you send me more dough and we stay long and hopefully the thing keeps going up. I mean, that's essentially just by the statistics. I mean, we had David on yesterday. Carl, from if you take, instead of the last four quarters, where obviously we've rallied, if you take the last five quarters, the market's up, most of the index are up 9%, individual stocks on average are up 6%. And yet I've had people from one of the groups that I do, work for the Protect Index program, where I do sub advisory work. And there's people calling up saying, "You guys didn't make 27% last year. I'm out of here." And you go, wait a minute.
Right.
You want to be in a dividend program, and you want to be in a protected program, and by the way, you're up 17, which is beyond anything that you could ever that I have ever done before, because I caught just the right indexes for a couple people on just the right days. I can never duplicate that, and yet they're pissed off. Okay, go. I mean, because now you're going to go with the guy who claims he did 27% last year. Now, if we're down this year, what's that guy going to do? He's going to lose you 40. I mean, it's this constant chasing, and I think you're chasing, Carl, because you can't get anything risk free.
That's part of the problem, though, is that when you think about when the foldback comes, it's going to be especially nasty because you forced, the purpose of having bonds in a portfolio historically has been, number one, you clip the coupon, right? And then secondly, that they have a senior position in the capital structure, so they're protected from capital loss, at least in theory, okay?
Right.
That doesn't mean something can't go wrong, but they're in a senior position.
Right.
Okay, so then you destroy the coupon on bonds. There goes one of the reasons to own them. You destroy the capital preference. And now all of a sudden, what is a guy that's running a pension fund where he has an actuarial responsibility to have a say? He gets forced into equities.
Right.
What happens when this thing folds back and all of a sudden his portfolio gets destroyed?
Well, I've heard, I've heard, Joe Kernan a few times say, and I like Joe, he's a good friend of Giants, and he said, well, the Fed is telling you have to get into a different risk area. Well, that's interesting, but, and I could have that conversation with you, Carl, and I don't know, I hope, say if your dad was an active investor and he comes to me and he's 80 years old and he's got this and this, and I go, he goes, no, I want to be in a protected type of thing. I think Carl might lose one of those Gulfstreams one of these days that I get. I want to have some money left for him, so I want to be protected. I don't get in July when all of a sudden the market just looks good or something to put this guy in junk bonds or something. I don't get to shift his just because the return on what he needs to be in it goes down. I don't get to put him in turtle eggs from Zimbabwe. I mean, I have a responsibility to my client. And if all of a sudden the risk-free rate goes from 3% to 0.5%, he's just going to have to get 0.5%. I don't get to move him into a different risk pool without very serious discussions, right?
Right, right. But the thing is that's essentially what you've had happen is that what's left, what is the purpose of bonds in the structure now? It is simply to buy them on the come that rates will go further down, and therefore you'll make a capital gain on them.
I would agree. Carl, I got a good one for you because I remembered this yesterday. This is what sometimes when you have most retail clients. I mean, I love my clients. Once in a while, you get somebody. This is like years ago. So the protected program made the market was up. God knows what 7-8% that year, and we're up like 6 or 7. So we were like right there with the protection. And the guy goes, well, I'm closing my account. And I go, why? And he says, well, I could have done a lot better flipping houses. Look how much real estate's done better. And I go, wait a minute. If I could, which I couldn't, I wouldn't even if I could, what would you have done if you got your statement like in September instead of seeing, the spider in there or some index, you saw an address of a house?
Right.
He goes, well, what do you mean? I said, well, would you have wanted me to go out and buy a house and go over there and start putting plasterboard? Well, no, that's not what, I don't want you doing that. Well, then how could you compare me against how much your buddy made in a house?
Right.
But, you know, dealing with the public, people do anything. I mean, fortunately, those people are few and far between, but good Lord. So, Carl, what are you seeing? I have a feeling we're going to have the most interesting year. It's going to be the best year. We're going to have we're not going to have a shortage of stuff to talk about this year, I don't think.
No, I don't think so at all. Beyond the political insanity, which is going to move things, you're going to have, I don't think this trade thing is anywhere near as real as everyone thinks it is and as priced in as it is within the market right now, which is a problem there. And then the other thing that goes along with it, though, is that you know, you look at the pushback that's coming and the squeezing that's coming in different areas, you know, like California with AB 5, right, with the yeah. with the independent contractors, and you know, this nonsense that's going on in Virginia with them claiming they're going to try to ban essentially all firearms. I don't know, you know, something's going to break here. This is just, you're turning the pressure up a yep. little too far, right. I think.
Yeah, I do too. Let's talk about that next time, bud. Won't be too long into the new year. You have a happy new year. Love talking to you this year. I'm looking forward to next year. SP Futures now down 550. We're leaking. NASDAQ Futures down 22. Carl, have a good one. Everybody else, happy new year. We'll be back on Thursday. Stacks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.